Phil Hendry Show. I'm Phil Hendry. This is the show. And now a look at the news. Former talk show king Phil Donahue's recent appearance on a TV news show, intensely involved, clean-shaven, and in a suit, was in stark contrast to the way he's lived the past 4 years. Since his retirement in 1996, pals say Donahue, who is 64 years old, has turned into a sad, lonely man with a scraggly white beard who sometimes waves to babies and is thrilled on a few occasions that someone asks for his autograph. Standing on a boulevard, as cars go by, Donahue stands there, just waving meekly at vans that race by with children whose faces are pressed against the glass, not recognizing for one half second who the sad, old, gray bastard is. How about that? This is from the news here. I'm not doing much of anything, he recently confessed to pals in posh Westport, Connecticut, where he lives with that girl wife, Marlo Thomas. There's no place for me anymore, he said, realizing that he is married to Marlo Thomas and could actually go home and have a conversation with her, as opposed to wandering boulevards and streets looking for somebody to recognize him and ask for an autograph. As one of Donahue's Connecticut neighbors confided to the Globe, Phil's a pain in the rear end. He won't stop banging on my back door at all hours of the night, asking, can I come in and talk and have coffee and watch your TV? He wanders around like a lost soul, waiting to be recognized and shake hands. I just as soon put him out of his misery, put him down like a terrier. Out of the blue, the white-haired ex-talkmeister showed up on TV's Meet the Press. What a pain in the rear end Tim Russert said he was. Wandering around the set, gray hair. Well, that's what they're saying. Donahue, who was recently on the set of Meet the Press, was a major pain in the arse end to Today and Meet the Press staffers. Constantly asking if he could have something to eat, constantly asking if he could have a glass of water or a cup of coffee, Donahue, unshaven and smelling like an open sewer, wouldn't leave anybody alone and finally got on and talked, and then they threw him out of the studio. Pitched his rear end right out there on a Fifth Avenue or whatever the hell it is. So there you go. There's Phil Donahue having a hard time with life. That's a rough deal. Phil Donahue, with the career that he had, you'd think he'd be glad to just... Look at Johnny Carson, for instance. Carson is a model citizen in many ways. Johnny Carson had his fame. He had it for 30-plus years. Then he said, goodbye. See ya. I'm done. He had it for 30 years, almost exactly, as a matter of fact. 62 to 92. And you never hear a peep out of him now. You know why? Because he can't stand it any longer. He wants out of it. He wants out of the limelight, and he's there on his little cliff house. I don't know what he does, playing tennis, you know, skeet shooting. Maybe he built a series of tunnels in his backyard to pretend like he's chasing Viet Cong. You know, who knows what he's doing. But he don't need this. He don't need the limelight anymore. But Donahue, apparently, according to this news report, here's a guy that invented the modern-day daytime talk show and took it to heights never before seen by anybody, and made himself probably a nice piece of change, and he's wandering around his Westport, Connecticut compound, wondering why nobody will knock on the door and say, does Phil live here? Can I have his autograph? Because when the day comes, and it's coming soon, that I get enough money put away, I am so gone from this gig, and I know that Matt gladdens the heart of many of you, I will be so gone from this gig... out of here. And I don't care if that means that Mike Schaefer, Melissa Morgan, and Craig Taylor are without jobs. They won't be for long. They're young and strong and strapping. They'll be fine. I'll turn them loose in the yard for a while. There'll be some horny-eyed guy just out of solitary, but they'll survive. But the minute I put away just enough Jack, we're gone. Because I'm not that married to this gig at all. This life, nothing, man. It sucks. You know? It's okay. I mean, the money is fine, and getting in here and actually doing a show is great, and talking to you fine guys, that's great stuff. But the pressure involved with, you know, going book to book and rating period to rating period, and then, you know, and having, like, talking to salespeople and having to sell, that's all, the business side of it, in other words, is very, very difficult. I would retire and I'd do a pirate radio station from my basement. Actually, I'd do a pirate station from, like, a van. I'd buy a van and I'd just move it around town. Just as soon as the FCC triangulated where I was, I'd split and go someplace else. And I've been asking Taylor if he'll help me with that, and he refuses. How much would it cost this man to put up a pirate station? What, 5 G's? get about 5G's tops. May I just say, I encourage all of you to investigate the possibility of setting up a pirate radio station in your home or in a van. You can buy the stuff at Radio Shack. You can buy your own radio station at Radio Shack. Why are you listening to this one? You can go out and buy your own radio station and you're listening to this? You can get a turntable and a transmitter and a... I swear to God you could. And you could have it exactly the way you want it. And if enough of you did it, the Federal Communications Commission would have absolutely no way of shutting down all of those stations. They would finally, once and for all, have to recognize that indeed the airwaves do belong to everybody. And you just, they can't, you know, forget it. You could get on and do whatever you think is great radio. You could yammer on like Rush. You could play Rush. You could, if you were Schaefer, it'd be all Rush all the time, yeah. You could get on there and talk till you were blue in the freaking face, play all kinds of weird-ass records, and have yourself a ball. Because that is that is your right. Now, digital radio is around the corner, and if you don't know anything about digital radio, let me just tell you this. Digital radio is essentially going to do this, and it's right around the corner. I mean, within just a few years. Digital radio is essentially going to make every single radio station currently on the air in America of equal strength. In other words, you'll be able to equally tune in a small station or a large station equally clear. It'll be an equally strong signal, and you'll be able to listen to that. And there's going to be so much competition out there in commercial radio, just the same old, all up and down the dial, that, you know, I mean, you guys might as well just get out, like I say, and start your own freaking station out there. Because I'll do it. My wife says to me, oh, look, you know, we were at the store the other day. You know who that couple is? I don't know who the hell it is. That's Eddie and Joe Blow. Oh, is that right? Yeah, they started their own radio station. Where do they live? They live in Santa Barbara. What do you mean they started their own radio station? They got it in the backyard. They went to Sears and they bought one of those tool sheds you can buy at Sears. And they stuck a bunch of radio equipment in it. And they broadcast 3 hours a day. What do they do? I don't know. They go in there and they get nude. Who knows what they do? They drink. Basically, what they do is they just broadcast their afternoon martini drinking. And now Bob and Eddie's martini drinking. How do you like that? You want a little extra dirty? Okay, great. And they just, you know, it's a conversation that they have. I said, geez, that sounds fantastic. She goes, yeah, they've been doing it for like 6 years. I said, how come the FCC hasn't busted on them? Well, I don't know. I think this, you know, she said something like the effective radius of their radio station was like 3 blocks. And I mean, maybe they had like some old lady who lived 4 blocks over and tune them in every afternoon to listen to them screw and drink. And I'll bother that he's screw and drink.
Oh, Christ, I love this. This is my favorite program.
That's it, folks. So that's what you got to do, okay? Bed squeaking, moaning, and then, you know, a little ice just clinking in a glass. And there you go. All right, we'll be right back on the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. And we are reading the news for you, and I'm getting over, thank you very much, thanks to endless amounts of water, I'm getting over the flu that I hit that thing pretty hard last week. It didn't hit me, I hit it. And I got right in the chest and the nose and everything, but because I'm drinking gallons and gallons of water, and spending an awful lot of time in a restroom around here, by the way, and meeting people I didn't know worked here, and having conversations with people I hadn't had conversations with before, I'm feeling a lot better, thank goodness. Liz and Debbie Reynolds bury the hatchet. That news here today on the Phil Hendry Show out of the Globe. And the picture they got here, when I saw this picture of Liz Taylor and what I thought was Larry Fortensky, not Debbie Reynolds. When you're making mistakes like that, you see, I understand that they can't get the publicity photo that they need. I understand that perhaps the press department was closed. I don't know, you know, whatever problem you got. But let's just go ahead and run the least flattering picture that we've got of someone. In this picture, Debbie Reynolds looks like Larry Fortensky. Now, how much worse can a photograph get? Unless you look like John Warner or whoever. Or how about Richard Burton? There you go. Debbie Reynolds and Richard Burton. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Debbie Reynolds. Liz Taylor and Richard Burton, I mean Debbie Reynolds, met the other day. Photograph here of a very lovely Seal Award. And my producer, Mike Schaefer, says that Mimi Rogers is better looking than Seal Award. And you're fired. Mimi Rogers is a fine-looking woman. She has a wonky eye. And I'm not saying that I don't have a wonky eye. All of us have something wrong with our eyes. One eyeball bigger than the other. One eyeball bugged out. Two eyes that bug out. Maybe one that kind of travels. And maybe you got a patch over an eye. Mimi Rogers has got a very distinctively, like one eye is... How about these people? What's up with the people that you see? One eye is kind of closed and the other one's wide open. Is that Bell's palsy? Well, in any event, Mimi Rogers has got something like that. She's a very lovely lady and she's got a nice body, but Celia Ward is much, much better looking than her. Thanks so much for your opinion, Mike. We weren't asking for it. Here's a story about test tube babies. There's a 100-pound difference between the world's first test tube babies, Louise Brown. Remember Louise Brown? Probably you don't. I was, in rock and roll radio, I remember at the time, in the late 70s, Louise Brown was born in a test tube. In other words, the ovum, the egg, and the sperm, the fertilization took place in a petri dish, and then so the conception actually took place in a test tube or something that was sitting on a counter in a laboratory, you know, like on a metal tabletop, and somebody would come in, you know, and, okay, it looks pretty good, Bob, let's go out and get sandwiches, you know, and they'd go out, and there's Louise Brown right there. She's 846 pounds now. She's 20-some-odd years old. She's walking down the street looking really angry. And wouldn't it be funny, not really funny, but what if she picked up a gun and just sort of went on a rampage in Harrods? I mean, test tube, baby, goes nuts. Somebody, what did they put in the tube? Anyway, there's two test tube babies. They're both fat. Full name, Louise Joy Brown, Elizabeth Jordan Carr. One was born in 78, the other was born in 81. Weight, 210 pounds. Oh, the other one's 105 pounds. Well, one of them comes from America, and the other one comes from England. So, what the hell they were doing over there? I'll tell you what they were doing over there. All those scientists in Britain, and all you have to do is travel in a cab or a bus in Great Britain, in London, get off the airplane and come on into town, and you'll see people standing around on the sidewalk with glasses of booze in their hand, chugging it down. Now, I got nothing against that. I think it's very refreshing. But the fact of the matter is, they're going back to work. Some guy that was in charge of Louise Brown's test tube, we say you got a drink, eh? Go out, have yourself a pint, and come back. 20 years later, the kid's 200 pounds. What did you drop in that tube, man? These guys that can drink at lunch, and they're still doing it over there. What did they introduce some lard or something into the... These guys are drinking lunch, and they're doing it over in Britain, and it's a national pastime because they just have a different view of drinking over there. See, it's a community thing, and the pub is a communal area, and it's a place where the family meets, and the neighborhood meets, and you bring your kids there, and you see all of these attitudes that they're trying to foist upon us. The fact of the matter is, you still get blind, stinking drunk. You're still getting blind, and you're still, you know, falling down in the street, okay? Well, you don't understand. The pub, you see, is something that's very communal. Yeah, got it. Look, man, you're still going to fall down going home. You want your kids to see that? At least here in the United States, we leave the kids at home. So we fall down in the street, and a cop picks us up, throws us in a cell overnight. Kid figures, oh, daddy's working late. Who knows? Anyway, I'm not really all that upset about that. And then finally, we have some news here from, let's see, Olympic sex scandal. I also wanted to mention this. Survivor Sean, great in the sack. Well, there's the headline. You wanted that, and you got it. Sean's great in the sack. So says his girlfriend, Erica. Now, this comes as bad news to Richard Hatch, who apparently had a thing for Sean because he had a nipple ring. I don't know. Survivor champ Richard Hatch really liked nipple ring neurologist Sean Kenneth while they were stranded on a desert island, but the truth is the gay million-dollar winner never stood a chance. Although handsome Dr. Sean did not burst Richard's bubble, there was a secret someone back home who he'd much rather see naked, his girlfriend Erica. But now that the CBS hit his history, pretty blonde executive assistant Erica has come forward to tell the star in an exclusive interview that she's madly in love with Sean and can't get enough of the sexy doctor's bedside manner. Sean is a fabulous lover. It's amazing. Because he's really not developed all that well. He's got a lot of sexual energy and unfortunately a little crippled in the physical department, but I think he's... He's very romantic. He sends me presents. He takes me out for candlelit dinners. He's opened up a bank account for me. I just love him. My heart starts racing every time I'm about to see him, which isn't exactly enough, she says. With Sean now working in New York as a medical consultant for the TV show Extra, and a medical consultant for Extra? I could be the medical consultant for Extra. What are you talking about, the medical consultant for Extra? What do they cover on that thing that's medical? Some guy with a pit rash? I could be the guy. Call me Dr. Phil. Well, the first thing you want to do, of course, is put a battery in that thing. I don't know, some celebrity with the clap? Yeah, he's got the clap, all right. Let's go to Phil Hendry. Well, what do you think he's got? I think it's the clap. Thank you. Yes, indeed. They need a medical advisor for the show Extra. Which celebrity's got the clap this week? They need a medical consultant on that show as much as we need one on this show. Medical consultant on Extra. Wasn't that the TV show that wanted to do a feature on our show at one time, and then I blew them off? All these TV shows, they want to come in, and they want to show, you know, they want to say, well, can we do a thing on your show, Phil? I said, what do you want to do? Well, we want to put a camera in the studio, and you're not going to do that. Okay, bye. I think Access Hollywood, that was it. And then it was Channel 9 and Channel 4 and Geraldo. On the MSNBC guy, he wanted to do something. And, you know, we're blowing off all these people. I don't blame them if they think I'm some kind of a stuck-up slob, some slob that they don't want to be around, because I keep telling no to all these guys who want to stick a camera up my face. I would much rather not have them in here. They can interview me and, you know, I go out to my house and interview me and my wife and kids. You can see what a fabulous guy I am, what a great cook I am, how I dress, kind of pajamas I wear. I just don't want your camera in my studio. That's all. Is that okay? Well, there's no other reason to talk to you, Phil, because frankly, you're a dull jackass without that. I love her, Sean 30 reveals in The Star. She's a smart, sweet girl, everything a guy would want in a woman. But she's not really a woman, he reveals. She's actually a guy, and that's why Richard probably had some feelings of lust for me. Well, thank you very much on that. Now, there's a very, very, very good, if I've got enough time to read this to you, a nice piece here in The Star on all the first families, the Nixons and the Johnsons and the Fords, and in other words, all of the families that inhabited the White House down through the years. And there's a very interesting thing in here about Lady Bird, about the Johnsons. There was a family once in the White House known as the Johnsons. You remember President Johnson? And they had a lady, our first lady at one time, a lot of you guys weren't alive to remember this, her name was Lady Bird. Now, if that ain't hick, but that wasn't enough. Not only was the first lady of the country named Lady Bird, they had to name their daughter Linda Bird. I don't think her maiden name was Bird either. It's just Lady Bird. That's like calling a guy something, you know, like Bulldog, Fred, I don't know, you know, name your guy, your like a president named after a Yorkshire Terrier or something. And then there was Lucy Baines. So there was Lady Bird and Linda Bird, and finally I got to something normal. Oh, thank God, Lucy Baines. Maybe she's normal. Well, it turns out that Lucy Baines wasn't a girl at all. She was a guy. So that's how messed up that family was. Lady Bird, Linda Bird, and the daughter that you thought was normal, Lucy Baines, was actually should have been Jack Baines or something. Bob. But no, not this family, because the dad was named Lyndon. Anyway, Lucy Baines Johnson enjoyed a lavish White House wedding in 1966, only to see her marriage collapse 13 years later amid widespread rumors that her husband was unfaithful. When Lyndon Johnson's pretty daughter, and they're being kind, well, she's very nice looking, nicknamed Watusi Lucy because of her love of dance, met handsome Patrick Nugent, it was love at first sight. Lucy, 17, converted to his faith, Catholicism, and they wed 2 years later. They quickly had 4 children and, like most Catholics, got divorced. But the marriage began to unravel in the late 1970s because that handsome man, that Catholic man, started turning that bottle upside down. Yes, folks, he had a drinking problem. Though the split was described as amicable, Lucy at the time admitted to being devastated. Not about the divorce, about being Catholic. Oh, I've only got 4 seconds? Well, we'll continue this in just a moment. It's Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to The Phil Hendry Show. From Dodger Stadium, it's Los Angeles Dodgers baseball. Hi, everybody. Rick Monday along with Ross Porter. And the Dodgers are going to see a lot of ball clubs go into the postseason, but of course not them. The Dodgers did not make the postseason. The Dodgers, as a matter of fact, didn't even make third place in the Western Division of the National League. As far as I know, and I don't really check the standings, they came in last. But then I don't look at the standings. I don't pay much attention to anything that happens with this ball club. I just want to be the number one announcer of the booth when Vin Scully kicks. And now, to tell you who the Dodgers are playing today, here's Ross Porter. Ross?
All right, thanks a lot, Rick. And hello, everybody, from beautiful Dodger Stadium, where the Dodgers today take on a team of famous people who have a glass eye. Batting first for the famous people with a glass eye, Peter Falk. Batting second, Sandy Duncan. Batting third, Sammy Davis Jr. Batting fourth, Dick Vitale. And finally, batting fifth, Colonel Klink. Dodger Baseball, brought to you by Laser Eye Center. That's right, even if you only got one good eye, go in there and have that thing fixed. Also by Visine. Just drop it right in there. And also by the new MGM Extravaganza, a great movie for all the family.
Mr. Peepers.
All right. Now here's the lineup for the Dodgers. Here, Rick Monday. Rick?
All right, the lineup of the Dodgers, Todd Goodwin, Grusinesius, Sheffield, or whatever. Okay, coming up to bat now for famous people with a glass eye, Peter Falk.
I know that the Dodgers have had an eye on this guy for a long time.
No doubt about it. He's got a good batting eye.
Here's one at the pitch.
Good eye! Outside ball one.
One of the things about it, if you're raised with a glass eye, it'll say keep your eyes on the ball. Keep your eye on the ball. Peter Falk, of course, a great actor. Always squinting through that Columbo trench coat. Right, looking at you with that one good eye, waving around, and that one big dead doll eye peering out at you. Next pitch.
Good eye! Ball two.
2-0. On deck, Sandy Duncan. Sandy Duncan, who is in, of course, Star Spangled Girl. And she's got the one eyeball that kind of goes in a little bit. Sandy and Peter Pan. Didn't make a very good Peter Pan. Scared the crap out of the kids when he came in the bedroom there with that one eyeball just going. Here's the one bitch pitch to Peter Falk. Swung on. Here's a ground ball down the right field line. That thing's going to be in fair. And Peter Falk is going to second. And he's in with a stand-up double. So Peter Falk, with one good eye, just tagged up Chan Ho Park for a double down the right field line.
And we'd like to mention, too, Ross, if any of the listeners know of any glass-eyed celebrities, call in and we'll get them in the lineup tonight.
That's right. Lines are open at 1-800-449-8686. If you know of any other celebrities with a glass eye. And it brings up Sandy Duncan. Sandy Duncan. Sandra Duncan. D-U-N-C-A-N. Hails out of Petersburg, Pennsylvania. 5'2". Weighs about 150 pounds, but she lost that eyeball down to about 149. Just kidding. Here's one at the pitch. Swung on and missed. Strike one, Sandy Duncan.
She took her eye off of that one.
0-1 at Sandy Duncan. The Dodgers take on famous people with glass eye, with one good glass eye.
Well, you know, with the season over, the Dodgers playing a team full of people with a glass eye. Well, it must be really nice being the Mariners, the Yankees, the...
Oh, you mean the teams made the postseason?
Yeah.
No doubt about that. I don't think they did anyway.
Yeah.
Here's the next pitch to Sandy Duncan. Swung on. Here's a ground ball, and that's fair. That goes into center field. Peter Falk rounding third base on his way home. Duncan into first base, and she's got a single that actually Peter Falk was able to stretch out. And Falk scores. It's 1-0, people with a glass eye. So look at that. Peter Falk, with one good eye, is able to stretch it into a scoring run there. And Sandy Duncan, with one wonky eye, And she's in with a single. So it's 1-0, people with a glass eye, Dodgers nothing. And that brings up Sammy Davis Jr. Sammy, of course, famous for some great songs like I Only Have an Eye for You. And, of course, Sammy recorded some great Who songs about 2 years ago. With that great Who classic, Behind a Blue Eye. And Don't It Make My Brown Eye Blue. Here's why the pitch to Sammy Davis Jr. Inside ball one. I was walking down the street the other day.
Yeah?
And I saw something in the window that I really wanted. It was a pair of
sunglasses.
So I went in there and
I
bought them. Here's the next pitch to Sammy Davis Jr. There's a pop up there into center field, shallow center. Look at Gary Sheffield. He drops the ball. Gary Sheffield took his
eye off of it.
And that ball is going to come in there. Sandy Duncan scoring another run. And the
sold American.
So look at that. As the one-eyed, glass-eyed celebrities go up 3-0 on the Dodgers as Gary Sheffield took his
eye
off of it. I got to tell you something right there. That is too much. That tightens my jaws.
Shut up.
Well, I'm Ross Porter. I'm never going to get the number one job in this booth.
Well, neither am I, because Scully will never die.
I noticed that Vin's wearing glasses these days. Something wrong with his
eyes? Well, we asked for our listeners to call in with one-eyed celebrities, and so far we've gotten Hunter Tylo's baby girl has one glass eye, and Lee Majors as Steve Austin, the Bionic Man.
I'm supposed to take from that Lee Majors has a glass eye, or the Bionic Man? I don't get it.
Gotta. Well, you're the guy that asked them to call in.
I don't have any one-eyed people. Here's the next batter, Dick Vitale. Well, you know, he wore those glasses. What an idiot. My glasses, all he needed was a monocle. Speaking of that, fans, don't forget on December 4th, here at Dodger Stadium, it's going to be Monocle Day. You got one good eye, come on. Who's the last guy I ever saw wear a monocle? That was going to be in the on-deck circle right now, Colonel Klink. Colonel Klink was something else. And then, of course, after Colonel Klink in the on-deck circle,
the Flying Purple People Eater had one eye,
so he's there, too. Here's a windup of the pitch to Dick Vitale. Inside ball one. One on, one out. Dodgers down to people with a glass eye, 3-0. As the Dodgers, who have sunk pretty low this season, they have played some pretty miserable, rotten baseball. Just fired their manager today. In fact, it isn't the Dodger team that we remember at all. It's not the Dodger team of old that won championships and scared it up there in the National League. No, this is a pathetic Dodger team that now has to play exhibition games against famous people with a glass eye. Just think of that. Just let that roll around.
Let it roll around
in your mind a little bit.
You know, it reminds me of Jack Nicholson in The Last Detail.
Uh-huh. Line up pitch to Dick Vitale, inside ball two.
And in The Last Detail, Jack Nicholson tells the story of a prostitute who had a glass eye.
Next pitch to Vitale. That's a strike.
And the prostitute would take the eye out of her head and wink you off.
And next pitch, swung on. Swung on. Please, dear God. That's a ground ball. He's out. Really?
That's right.
You know, I knew that girl.
Well, I bet you did.
All right, that'll bring up Colonel Klink. Colonel Klink wearing a monocle. Say, fans, December 4th, Sunglass Day. Come on out and get a pair of sunglasses. And also we'll be giving away collapsing telescopes. So you can just lift that patch up and have those collapsing telescopes they used to use on pirate ships.
Don't forget about microscopes, too.
Yeah, that'll be on February 3rd. And remember, all three of those days, the Dodgers aren't playing baseball at all. $6 to get in, $2.50 general admission. Come on out to Dodger Stadium. It's a really great place to be when they aren't playing baseball. Here's the windup, the next pitch. Yeah, goodbye, that thing's out of here. Goodbye, baby. Grand slam home run. All right, well, this pathetic ball game's out of hand. 5-0 Dodgers down to a team of people with glass eyes. Are you kidding me?
I know, I don't believe it either.
I'm Ross Porter along with Rick Bunny. We'll take a break here. Get back to Dodger baseball in just a moment with the score. People with glass eyes, 5. Dodgers, nothing. You're listening to The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show. Boy, do the Dodgers, do they suck, I guess is the only word you can use. They do. And they fired their manager yesterday, I guess. Well, they didn't fire him, but I guess the word hit the LA Times that Davey Johnson is going to be out sooner or later. How could you hang on when you know? I didn't understand anything about Davey Johnson's behavior this year. In light of the fact he's a good manager and he's a good baseball man, why he would hang around an organization with that kind of gossip that was flying, and the castigation of your talent as a manager, and the, you know, question mark as to whether you'll be here next year. Why do you hang around and let them humiliate you? Just leave. Just leave. Whoever that guy is that's running that team, I understand. I guess he's a nice guy. I don't know. His name's Bob Daley, and he used to go to a lot of baseball games. This is apparently his qualification to own or run or be a part owner of or whatever the hell it is that he does of the Dodgers. Some of those guys turn out to be pretty smart guys. Jerry Jones, who was not a professional football man, turned out to be a pretty decent general manager, hired a good coach, some good players, you know, for the Cowboys. But I don't know what they got running the Dodgers now. They got this guy Malone, who looks like a weasel, probably acts like one. I don't know if he's any good or not. Went out, got a whole bunch of ball players. Man, they couldn't get the freaking first base with a $5 a night hooker. I mean, it's just nothing with these guys. They're doing anything right. And Davey Johnson's hanging around waiting to get canned. Man, I would have quit. I would have walked from that gig so fast. Just get out of there, Davey. It ain't the old Dodgers. It ain't the team you thought you were. And there's no O'Malley's there anymore. I understand probably someday they'll be great again, but this ain't it. Just get out of there. That ball club has had it. Meanwhile, the Angels with Mike Socia, tremendous man. I hope they re-sign him because there's a guy that did work miracles with that team. And Michael, he's going to make Michael Eisner look like a real world beater. Michael Eisner wouldn't know baseball. He wouldn't know baseball if one hit him square in the nose. This guy goes out and gets lucky, hires Socia. Socia does miracles with nothing. And they hired him. They signed him like a 3-year deal, 300 G's a year. That's fine. And now all of a sudden, maybe Eisner don't want to sell that team, huh? Maybe he's got himself a ball club. Maybe all of a sudden he's a baseball genius. This freaking guy thinks buying a baseball team is like buying an amusement park. Well, we can own up all these sports franchises, you know? And look at, man, you work for Disney, which means you can't be involved in any controversy. You can't be involved in the talk radio. Look what happened to all the radio stations you own. They stink. You can't have controversy, sports or otherwise. Stick to building roller coasters. Anyway, next year, Mike, if I were you, Soch, and it's just a suggestion, get your agent to stick those guys up for more money. Because you know what? They're either going to pony up or somebody else will. That's the truth. And I'll start talking to you now when we drop the kids off at school, too.
Put a little alcohol on and have somebody pull it out.
Oh, God, I can't do that because...
Well, let your daughter do it.
Why don't you let your daughter
do it
or something?
I can't. It's very painful. I passed out.
No, you're too much of a baby.
No, ma'am, I'm not. I have a father and I have a son and a daughter, but it hurt when they did it.
It doesn't hurt because I've had my own kids.
Try it right now. Do you? Is it in your ear right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, are you in front of a mirror?
I'm near one right now.
No, I'm talking to the man. Okay. Take the thing. Isn't there a ma'am in the surgical post? Isn't there a little pin they pull out the back of it?
Yeah, that's nothing.
Okay.
Anybody.
I got it now.
Just
go ahead, try it.
Put a little alcohol on.
Put some alcohol on.
All right, hold on.
And it'll deaden any pain.
It'll deaden it.
Just pull that thing out.
Okay, now pull
and
the...
don't wait too long.
Pull the thing out.
Yeah.
Ow.
Is it
Did you pull it out?
No.
Well, you've got to get somebody to pull it out because you're being too much of a baby.
No, ma'am. What I'm trying...
Try it one more time, Steve.
My wife and daughter are going to get home soon.
Try it one more time.
Okay, here goes. Wait. Ow. Ouch.
Is it out?
No.
Well, it should be out.
Yeah.
And don't tell me, because it's only a little weeny thing and it's a little hole.
A little weeny.
Well, did you put some alcohol?
Oh, wait a minute. I forgot to put alcohol. Hold on.
Put the alcohol on it, Steve.
Okay, hold on. Okay, here goes.
Are you ready?
Yeah, here goes. Please, God, don't let it hurt. Ow.
Are you pulling on it?
Yes, I'm pulling on it. It hurts.
You might as well have your wife do it.
I can't let my wife do it. She's going to think I'm a baby. Oh, man.
Well, you are a baby.
What makes you think that?
Because you won't let your wife do it.
I don't want her looking at me crying and everything. Ow, 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 ow. Ow! You can't tell me you actually got one of these out, man, because it's too painful.
Listen, there's no pain at all.
I had a surgical post in my ear, and they took it out after a few weeks and stuck.
I know, I had it done, and it came out and in my sleep.
Ow! Ow! Man, that hurts.
What are you doing?
Listen, I don't believe him. Phil, I don't know where you get these creeps on your program.
Ma'am, all I know is I love my daughter. I got my ear pierced.
Oh, you're full of baloney. You're full of baloney. You love your daughter.
I love my daughter deeply.
You love to be on television and like to sue people. That's all.
Ow!
Well, you might as well stop if you can't get it out, okay?
I damn near ripped my earlobe off. Are you happy, ma'am?
No, I'm not, because you're the kind that you sue everybody for everything. When the doll...
These people deserve to be sued because they don't have a sign saying that if you get an earring in your right ear, you could be gay.
Ah,
they don't
come
put the
on.
Sign up there.
So
where's
what
your
are you afraid of being gay?
Do you have an earring in your right ear?
Yeah.
So you're gay. At least that's what the world's going to think.
I don't care what they think. How can you be gay if you've got a family and a wife and a...
They don't know that. They don't know that.
Your doctor knows.
I got a right earring and they're all going, hey,
but
fancy
boy. But your doctor know?
Hey,
doctor? You're not gay?
My doctor? Yeah, but he might think I've turned.
I can't talk to such a stupid idiot. An idiot.
You really are acting stupid. You got a daughter and a wife and a son. Suck it up. Pull the thing out. Go back to the piercing hut and tell them you want it out.
Oh, that, how'll that look? Oh, yes, sure. To the very place that I passed out?
Yes, go there where you passed out.
Let me try it one more time. Is there any kind of pain deadening? You know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to take a swig of whiskey. Hold on. I got to get good and drunk.
Bill Henry. Bill Henry.